Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Zingari, and I just want you to know that we've edited this podcast for brevity, so you hear all the good stuff quicker. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The Major League Baseball season is at its halfway point, and it's been a season where recent trends in the game have continued to develop. For instance, home runs are up 10% from a record year in 2017, but strikeouts are also on a record pace. The overall number of hits is down. The use of defensive shifts is up. In one minor league this summer, computers are going to be used to call balls and strikes. Pitchers are throwing the ball much faster than they did just 10 years ago. And there are questions about the composition of the ball itself. Is it juiced? A number of players think the answer is definitely yes. Well, we got a lot of questions for our panel today on our annual summer baseball show. Joining us, VPR's Mitch Wortlieb, whose morning sports report is a big favorite with many listeners. And did I mention that Mitch is a diehard Red Sox fan? Also with us, Burlington City Councilor Kurt Wright, who's also co-host of The Morning Drive on WVMT. Kurt is beaming right now because he's a Yankee fan, and it's a team that has one of the best records in baseball at this time. Also with us, VPR's Amy Noyes. Amy is a charter member of Red Sox Nation, a big fan who also has some very definite ideas about the changing nature of the game of baseball. Great to have you all back.
Thanks so much, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
So just before we discuss some of the big issues confronting baseball, let's go around the table and get your impressions of how your teams are doing in the first half of this season. Mitch, if the playoffs started today, I don't think the Red Sox qualify. So this after winning the World Championship in 2018, what's happening with this team?
Yeah, if the playoffs started, I think 2 months from now, the Red Sox still wouldn't make the playoffs. What's happening with this team is that it is very difficult to repeat. The guest sitting right across from me here in Colchester will remind us all happily that the last team to repeat World Series champs was the New York Yankees, I think back in 99-2000. Is that right, Kurt?
I believe so.
So it's tough to do. That's number one. Number two, I think the Red Sox made a huge mistake in spring training this year, and I don't think they're going to admit this well until the season is over. They held back a lot of their starting pitchers who had pitched into October and into the World Series, including Chris Sale and David Price and some of the others. And the thinking was, you know what, we're going to save their arms because we don't want them to get tired later in the year. These guys are great. As soon as they get to the real games, they'll just start pitching great and we'll be fine. Well, the exact opposite happened. Guys like Chris Sale especially didn't pitch a lot in spring training. They got to when the games counted, and they were basically doing spring training then, but the games counted, and the Red Sox got off to a 2-12 start. I don't think they ever really fully recovered. They got to within about 5 games, maybe 6 games, before sliding back again. So it's really pitching that's hurting them. They, of course, lost some big arms in the bullpen, Craig Kimbrell being the biggest one. They're trying to rely on a bullpen closer by committee with guys who are not true closers like Matt Barnes and Ryan Brazier. And because they're having to work harder because the starters haven't been able to go deep into games, the bullpen is tired. All of this is catching up with the Red Sox. The hitting is there. The pitching is not. And that's why they are basically right now sort of a middle-of-the-road team, and they are out of the playoff picture.
And, Mitch, you mentioned the bullpen. I've got to say, I watch a lot of Red Sox games, and I think I'm a pretty loyal fan in following how the team is doing. I've got to tell you, there have been some nights this spring and early summer where I see people coming in as relief pitchers. I've never heard of these people before. Who are they?
You're not alone. A lot of these guys are being called up from the minors because they have to be. The Red Sox just didn't have the money to pay guys like Craig Kimbrell, who wanted a really big payday. And in fact, other teams didn't either. He didn't get a job until only very recently. Teams weren't willing to pay out those big bucks. And what happens in those cases is, especially after you win a World Series, you kind of feel like, and again, the Red Sox would never admit this publicly, you kind of feel like, you know what, we can get away with this. We don't have to have the big star closer. And you end up relying on arms that really are not major league ready. And that's why you're seeing these guys come out and get shelled and they get sent back to the minors. It's no way to play winning baseball.
Kurt, what can we say about the Yankees this year, despite many, many injuries that would have affected many other teams? The Yankees just keep finding ways to win, and they find players who can step in and crush the ball. You must be very pleased with this first half.
Well, I am, other than the last two games before the All-Star break when Tampa got two back from us. But yes, the injuries have – if I'd been out of the country and hadn't known one thing about baseball and just came back and you told me the injuries – Judge missing 2 months, Stanton basically out for the year, Betances, Severino, Didi, on and on and on. I would have said we must be 8 or 10 games below 500 at least, and 10, 12, 13 games out of first place. So I would be amazed, frankly, to see where they are. Now, the fill-ins did a great job holding together. I always knew, though, that at some point we needed these players back, and most of the team is back now, and the main key ones that are out, and I don't know if we're going to see them this year or not. Severino, that would be huge if he was able to come back, but I don't know if we can count on that. Betances in the bullpen, but we're pretty deep in the bullpen. And Stanton, I think they're expecting to be back within about a month. He's missed basically the entire year. But their hitting has been extremely clutch this year, where in the past it's been all home runs. Not that they haven't hit a lot of home runs, but the hitting has been much more situational this year. They've got a lot of clutch hits. I think they're maybe leading baseball in hitting with runners on base. The bullpen, mostly except for a few hiccups here and there, has been outstanding as advertised. The starting rotation, the Yankees are still going to be looking for a starter, and I expect them to pick one up before the deadline because that starting pitching is still a little bit thin. And if you get to the playoffs, which we think we will, and by the way, I'm not discounting the Red Sox. They're still only a couple games out of the wild card, and it's a long way to go. But if you get to the playoffs, the big key for the Red Sox last year was having those big frontline starters when you get in the playoffs. You might be able to bludgeon teams during the regular season, but you got to rely on some great starting pitching when you get there.
So you feel that the Yankees need to make a move in the second half of the season to solidify the starting rotation?
I do believe they need to, and there's a lot of talk about Bumgarner right now. His numbers aren't great, but, you know, he is when you look at Verlander, when he was traded, the year he was traded, it didn't look like that great because he wasn't pitching all that great with Detroit. He went to Houston and was better than ever. Bumgarner has been a tremendous pitcher. For a couple of years now, he has not been, but he's one of the all-time pitchers in the playoffs in the World Series. What I do not want the Yankees to do is decimate the farm system for a rental pitcher or for a mid-level pitcher who is like a National League pitcher. Like, there's a lot of talk about Zach Wheeler from the Mets. Zach Wheeler has a 4.69 ERA with the Mets. He's pitching in the National League and pitching to pitchers some of the time. If his ERA is 4.69 in the National League, it'll be 5.69 in the American League. Not good.
Today on the program, it's our annual summer baseball show. Your thoughts about what's happening in baseball. In a little bit, we're going to talk about some of the big changes going on and get your thoughts about that as well. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211 if you'd like to give us a call and give us your thoughts about the game of baseball. Well, Amy, as Mitch mentioned, this has been a difficult and frustrating first half for the Boston Red Sox. What are your thoughts on how this season has unfolded?
No doubt it's been difficult and frustrating for the Boston Red Sox. One thing that I found really interesting, and I think Mitch summed up our problems really well, but there are a few players who have stepped up to the plate, so to speak, that were surprising and exciting to watch. Xander Bogaerts, one of my favorite players, is mm-hmm. really becoming a team leader, and I'm really happy to watch that. I'm excited to see it. And Rafi Devers, who struggled a lot of last year, is really a champion at the plate for us now, and he's making plays at third base that he wasn't making last year, which is crucial. And then Chavis, our rookie, he's really added to the team too. So it's kind of fun to see players who weren't really part of the big conversations last year making a difference this year.
I mean, Amy, if you look at this Red Sox team, with the exception of Michael Chavis, who was playing, I think, in Pawtucket last year,
yes.
If you look at sort of the positional players, this team this year is pretty similar to last year's team, isn't it?
Nearly identical, but not in performance.
So it's been a combination, you think, of pitching letting the team down and hitting as well?
Well, you know, as Mitch mentioned, the pitchers, they didn't seem ready for the season, so they're not going deep enough into the games, which is bringing in the bullpen earlier, and we're losing leads, and we're giving up games because the bullpen can't do it all, and frankly, it's not perfect either.
And so if you're the general manager of the Boston Red Sox and the trade deadline is coming up at the end of July, and this year the one big change is there is no trade deadline at the end of August. It's going to be July 31st, and that's it. People like to think of teams, are they buyers? Are they sellers? What are the Red Sox?
The Red Sox are buyers. They're looking for pitchers. They may be looking for another starting pitcher. They may be looking to bolster the bullpen. Nathan Eovaldi is just coming off the injured list, and when he gets back to playing, they are looking at using him in a closer role. So I think it's still undecided what type of pitcher they're looking for, depending on how that works out, but definitely buyers.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Bob, who's calling from Rutland City. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Just wanted to quickly ask your panel what they thought of the penalty that was assessed to Marisnik of the Astros for his collision with LaCroix there just before the All-Star break. Myself, personally, I think it was kind of a light penalty, but thank you.
All right, Bob. Mitch, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, this has to do with the new rules that have come into play for blocking the plate. You know, catchers are not supposed to block the plate, but runners also have a responsibility now, too, where they can't go out of their way to hit a player. And Marisnik apparently ran pretty hard into the catcher there. And, you know, I don't know exactly what the penalty was that he was given, but, you know, with the new rules in the game, you do have to play by them. I do think it's tough, though, with the judgment call, because I don't think that he meant to injure on the play. I've seen a replay of it. It didn't look to me like there was an intent to injure there. I think probably the call was about right. But again, I think a lot of players are confused about what the rules are these days. It's certainly a whole lot different than it was years ago when it was basically anybody. You know, you could collide with the catcher or any player as hard as you wanted, and whoever ends up with the ball, whether the player drops it or not, you're either safe or out.
And, Mitch, have the same changes been done at second base when people are sliding in?
Second base is a really – that's even more difficult to figure out, because I've seen players slide in. And what you have to do now is the player who's sliding cannot try to, quote-unquote, take out the second baseman. I mean, technically, you were never really allowed to do that. However, there was leeway given where you could go hard into second base, try to disrupt that throw over to first to break up the double play. You got to get out of the way now. You've got to give that second baseman a clear path to get the ball, step on second, and throw over to first. And again, that's such a judgment call. It's so subjective for the umpire to decide on that. And I've seen players now with the new rule that go in, maybe the cleat gets up just a little bit, maybe catches the second baseman, you know, a little bit on his ankle, and they get up and they start staring at each other. Nobody knows exactly really what is supposed to happen there. But I do think that there, since that rule change has been made, it's a very gray area.
Let's take a look at some of the ways that baseball is changing and get your thoughts on whether or not these changes are good for the game or perhaps not. First, the record number of home runs, a pace now to break the record by 10% this year. Now, the season record for an individual team to hit home runs is 267, and that was set by last year's New York Yankees. Right now, four teams, the Yankees, the Minnesota Twins, the Milwaukee Brewers, and the Seattle Mariners, are on pace to break this record. And as I mentioned earlier, a record number of people are striking out. So what are your thoughts about this new emphasis being placed on home runs, strikeouts, fewer and fewer teams trying to manufacture runs the old-fashioned way with hits, bunts, and stolen bases? Kurt, is it good for the game or not?
I'm not going to say that home runs are bad, because I think that's probably still the thing that excites fans more than anything else. But I think that I think that there is too much emphasis, and I think part of it is driven again by the analytics. Now, of course, we know that there is the controversy about, is the ball juiced? And we know that Justin Verlander just basically came out with some pretty colorful language and blasted the commissioner and baseball generally, saying that he said, come on, we basically know the baseball is juiced. He said, we know they do this for the home run derby. And it's, he said, you can just tell it's juiced. Now, the commissioner has come out and denied that. He said he's absolutely said the league is not doing anything, but the numbers are there. I mean, whether it's the ball juiced or is there just being so much emphasis on everybody going for the long ball. But I think some of these changes are not good. I mean, I still do miss some of the create runs, not just sit back and wait for home runs. And I don't think it's good for fans to watch. Again, home runs are exciting, but I don't think it's good for fans to sit back and watch too much inactivity. Strikeouts can be exciting too, but when it's like strikeouts or walks and the ball's not put in play that often, I don't think that's a great thing. And I think I really would like to see, I hope this is a phase that we're going through in baseball, and that we do go back to more teams running and bunting, at least here and there. This, the bunt is almost going away. Hit and run is almost gone away. I'm not sure all those things are great for baseball in the long run.
Amy, talking about that juiced ball, this is from a recent article in the Wall Street Journal. Quote, a Major League Baseball study last year proved that the current ball has less drag and therefore more aerodynamic than its predecessor, though research does not explain exactly why. There are different thoughts. Now, Major League Baseball owns the factory that makes the baseballs in Haiti. These are hand-stitched. There's also some talk about that the rubber cork center of the ball has been changed, and therefore it now flies another 5 or 10 feet further than before. In the recent international series in London, we saw that ball flying out of the park. Do you think there's a legitimate concern that something is happening with the baseball, or is it a conspiracy theory?
No, I think there's cause for alarm there. I think that when you see a ball fly like it did in London, and in the home run derby, it's obvious that something's been done to that cork. It's a bouncier ball, whatever it is. That's a different, I think, question, though, than the stitching. The stitching is, it used to be a pitcher could grip a ball and lean a finger against those stitches, and that helped with the pitch. And there was a little more drag as the ball went through the air because the stitches were raised. But I think we're seeing a lot of injuries to pitchers because that torque's coming from their arm more now. They have no leverage on the ball because they can't use the seam anymore. So I think it's a bigger conversation about the makeup of the ball.
Mitch, what do you think?
Well, part of the reason the balls were flying out of London Stadium is because the Red Sox pitchers just stunk during those two games that they went over there. And I really wish they hadn't done that thing, but that's another story. You know, I do think that there is the ball is definitely being juiced. It's been altered in some way. But I also think a lot of this has to do with the uppercut swing that is being preached now throughout Major League Baseball. Swing for the fences, you know, uppercut swing. Don't worry about it if you strike out. This is being taught now at the minor league level. It's being taught at the major league level, and it's leading to all these home runs. The Yankees set a record this year for most consecutive games with a home run at 31, shattering a record that had been set back in 2002. But what really annoys me about this, Bob, and the reason I think it's really terrible for baseball, is that when every team is taking this strategy of swing for the fences, go for the home run, that's what fans want to see, that's how we're going to teach you guys to play. When you get these weaker teams like your Toronto Blue Jays and, you know, the Baltimore Orioles and all those teams, instead of trying to play some small ball and manufacture runs during a game, which actually could help you win a few games, no, they're not going to get you to the playoffs, no, you're not going to be an elite team. But for fans that might want to come to the ballpark and see Toronto beat Boston or beat New York on a day, they're not going to see that happen because there isn't the small ball play. There isn't the smart baseball being played. They're swinging for the fences. They're trying to get home runs. They lose games 12-8 as a result. I think that is so bad for the game of baseball, and I can't believe the people that run the game can't see that because you can't just have 10 teams or so that are basically competing for the playoffs and another 20 that don't have a shot and are playing terrible baseball on a given day because you're emphasizing the home run so much.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we have our annual summer baseball show. We're taking a look at the way that the game of baseball is changing, whether or not these changes are good for the game. Our panel includes VPR's Amy Noyes, Kurt Wright, co-host of The Morning Drive on WVMT, and of course, VPR's Mitch Wertlieb. We did get this email from John in Montreal who wants to know, what are your thoughts on the proposed sharing of the Tampa Bay Rays with Montreal? John wants to know, is that something that's realistic? Could it happen in the future? Well, the Expos played in Montreal until the 2004 season. Then they moved to Washington, D.C., and they became the Nationals. So we're going to take a look at this idea because the attendance in Tampa is dreadful. They average around 10 or 12,000 fans per game. And there are many minor league teams that do better than this. So with us now to discuss the possibility of having Montreal and Tampa Bay share a team is CBC reporter Camila Hinkson. Camila, nice to have you on the program.
Nice to be with you.
So help us understand, is the idea of having Montreal and Tampa Bay share a team, is this just somebody's wild dream, or does it have some idea, some foundation in reality?
It does sound like a bit of a wild dream, doesn't it? I mean, I think the people putting forth this plan want us to think that it's based in reality. We heard about this a couple of weeks ago. The idea is to keep baseball in Tampa. So that's what we were hearing from Stu Sternberg, who is the owner of the Rays. They want to make sure that baseball stays in that area. And so this is the idea that they came up with. And they've been trying to get the stadium built there, a new stadium built in the area for a long time. They've been having some issues. So now they're saying, okay, what else can we do to keep the team here? Let's split the games between two places. 81 home games in a season is too many. So let's split it and see if we can kind of drum up some support in two places instead of just trying to keep it in one.
And what kind of reaction is this getting from baseball fans in Montreal?
I think it's some cautious optimism. I think the fans here wanted a team all of their own, but no one is going to say no to a part-time team. I think the issue here, and these are questions that people keep bringing up, is like, how exactly do you do that? How do you split a team between two places? How do you split a fandom? Will the team change names? How will they recognize Montreal? There are a lot of questions here, but I think that the attitude here, and even with Stephen Bronfman, who is the businessman trying to bring baseball back here, the attitude is some baseball is better than no baseball.
And do you think that fans in Montreal or even ownership in Montreal would be willing to build a new stadium and then share that team?
Oh boy, that is the question here, right? We had an election, a municipal election here 2 years ago, and the woman who won ran on a platform that included no public money for a new stadium unless there was a referendum first. So that did garner support among Montrealers. So there is this idea that people don't want to see public money going into a new stadium. Then compound that with this idea that the stadium would only be used half of the year. Not really sure how that's going to work. Stephen Bronfman did say that he, you know, doesn't foresee any problems having the stadium be used in other ways. Whether that's, you know, Montreal has a lot of things going on in the summer, so whether that's shows or what other events, he didn't see it as a problem. But it does seem a bit unlikely. We in Montreal had problems getting a new stadium for the Expos when they were here, And so it's the same kind of idea, right? Why are we going to build a stadium for a part-time team?
Hey, Camila, can I ask you something? You mentioned that the folks at Major League Baseball say they want to keep baseball in Tampa. Why? Especially given such dismal attendance they've had for some pretty good teams.
It is a bit of a mystery, isn't it? I mean, Sternberg was talking about he's built or bought a home in the area, and he was trying to really play up this idea of, like, you know, I'm here to stay, and I want to keep the team, but there's no real reason why. What I do know is that Rays fans do watch the team on TV, so they do have good numbers in terms of their broadcast. But people don't go. And is that a function of the geography? The team plays in St. Pete. It's hard to get to. I'm not entirely sure. But, you know, in Montreal, we do know about the pain of losing a team. And I don't think anyone really wants that, right? No one wants to see that heritage of baseball in Tampa go. I don't think that's the way anyone wants to get a team. But it does seem kind of strange, considering the fact that the attendance is so low. Why are we trying to preserve this?
And Camila, do we have sort of some precedent for this when the last couple of seasons that the Expos played in Montreal, they also played some games in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, so I believe in 2000, that would be 3 and 4, the Expos played about 20 games of the season in Puerto Rico. There is a bit of a difference here, though, right, in that the Expos were kind of on their last legs at that point. This sharing between Tampa and Montreal is, or the Tampa area and Montreal, is billed as a long-term solution. So this isn't just kind of, you know, can we get this team to Puerto Rico to kind of, you don't really need to drum up support for baseball in Puerto Rico. Puerto Ricans love baseball. But this isn't really that kind of thing. It's not a tour of the Expos to, you know, make Puerto Ricans or whomever Expos fans. This is a long-term plan, and that includes, you know, 40 games in either city. So there is some precedent, but it is different in that major way that you would have, like, fans of this one team on either ends of Canada and of the United States.
And as Mitch mentioned, it's a little surprising that Major League Baseball is so committed to keeping a team in Tampa Bay, considering how dreadful the attendance is there. But if for some reason that team folds in Tampa Bay, it's not automatic that it would go to Montreal, because there are a lot of other cities that are very interested in having a team.
Yeah, and so that's the thing, right? It's an interesting plan. So let's, like, if we see this through, and Montreal and Tampa are sharing this team, that paves the way for another city to get a team. Like, I believe there's a team in North or South Carolina, or a city in North or South Carolina, who's interested in bringing baseball there. So does that pave the way for another city to get that team? But then, what if in Tampa they do end up getting some kind of deal to build a new stadium? Then what happens to Montreal? So there's so many different ways that this could go. But, yeah, Montreal is by no means the only city that doesn't have baseball that's vying for a team. So, you know, and I'm not entirely sure why. I guess Montreal is kind of more advanced in their efforts to try and bring baseball back. But there are teams or cities closer to Tampa where this might work, but for whatever reason, they've decided to have this whole sharing concept between Montreal and Tampa. But for sure, there are other cities that are trying to get baseball back.
Well, you've got a group of people here who would love to see baseball return to Montreal.
Oh, yes.
Camila Hinkson of the CBC, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Ty, who's calling from Fairfax. Hey, Ty, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I just wanted to say that with baseball, my biggest issue is the use of several pitchers per game and the need to pick up the pace of the game. I think pitchers should basically have to pitch to a minimum of two batters or until the inning is over. And this would reduce the use of specialized pitchings for matchups. And, you know, if you don't pitch to two batters minimum, you shouldn't be able to actually pitch in the next scheduled game. and that would kind of make it more strategic for the manager and not waste our time with all these pitching changes, which I think slows down the game just
okay. Yeah, Ty, thanks very much for your phone call. And Amy, I think we're headed in this direction with Major League Baseball in a season or two of trying out a minimum of three batters. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah. And I'm with Ty. I think it's a great idea. I think the game slogs when we're bringing in a pitcher just to face one batter or to get one out. It's not good for the game.
Let's talk to Nola, who's calling from Ripton. Hi, Nola. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Just calling to put my two cents in for the Red Sox. They are the same team as last year, but they're not. But one thing they've got that they haven't lost is Alex Cora, and he is a really great guy.
Huh.
The other thing that they've got that they will never lose is at least the spirit of David Ortiz. And I think if these guys can just crank their heads on tight, they might just make a big move in the second half of the season. I'm counting on them to do that. So I'm not saying for sure, but I think they've got all they need. They just need to kind of pull it all together as a team, which is what they did last year so beautifully. And baseball's changed so much. When I was a little girl, I was a diehard Mets fan in New Jersey. I relished that day in 1969 when they won the World Series. For the last 30 years, I've been a diehard Red Sox fan. I just hope we can keep it from getting any more complicated as far as do this, do that, don't do that. It's just gotten so complex. And are you guys going to have a show at the end of the season, or is this it?
Not sure.
I like that idea, Noah. I like all your ideas.
I think Mitch would like to have a weekly show.
Sure would.
You did have one in the playoffs a couple years ago.
Yeah, well, Noah, we'll see how the Red Sox do in the second half of the season. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today is our annual summer baseball show. With us today, Kurt Wright, who is co-host of The Morning Drive on WVMT, and VPR's Amy Noyes and Mitch Wortley. We're looking at how the game is changing. Mitch, we've been talking about the Yankees and the Red Sox, but there's some surprise teams out there that are doing remarkably well, and the Minnesota Twins come to mind.
Yeah, I was thinking about having our own Henry Epp here at VPR substitute for me today because he is a Minnesota native who is a big Twins fan, and they are doing great. The Twins for a while there, I don't know if they're leading anymore, but they had the home run lead, even though the Yankees have this incredible lineup. They are playing some fantastic baseball. Their pitching is there. They're getting timely hitting. They're getting the big home runs. They're well managed. They play in a beautiful ball field. I think it might be their time. I don't think they can beat the Yankees come playoff time. But the Minnesota Twins are a great example of a mid to small market team that can have success. And if you build through your farm system and if you stick with the plan and, you know, you make some wise investments here and there, you can actually do it. You can become one of these teams that can compete with the perennial favorites. And I think the Twins are a wonderful story this year.
And Amy, we've been talking about the Rays. Talk about a small market team, hardly any attendance whatsoever. Here's a team that's very competitive, and they like to experiment, which I think is fascinating. This idea that you don't necessarily need a starting rotation, right?
Right.
In Tampa Bay, they have somebody who's known as the opener.
That's right.
And this is going to be a relief pitcher who starts the game, opens the game, pitches an inning or two, and then that's it. And they're having some success with this concept.
Yeah, kind of like the Red Sox starters who are pitching an inning or two, right? Except for they're doing it on purpose. And it's working. And, you know, that's one of the great things about baseball, that managers can try new concepts. And we can all complain about it or hail it. Everybody has an opinion. But if it's working, it's working.
I wanted to discuss the velocity of the ball just for a second, because there's no question that pitchers are throwing the ball much faster than ever. Now, for instance, 10 years ago, there were a total of 196 pitches that were clocked at 100 miles per hour or faster. Last year, there were 1,300. 10 years ago, there were 11 pitchers who actually threw the ball at least 100 miles an hour. Last year, 74 did. And the fastest record we have now is 105. Now, some people might wonder, okay, so they're throwing the ball harder, so what? Interesting, what I love about baseball is you have so many different statistics. And I came across one that was based on how fast the ball is pitched and what is the batting average against that pitcher. Well, if someone is throwing 92 miles an hour, batters on average hit 283. Not too bad. When the pitch is at 101, it drops 90 points to the high 190s. So no question there's a link between pitchers throwing the ball faster and harder and hitters' inability to hit those pitches. Now, Kurt, there's a experiment in the Atlantic League this summer of moving the pitching mound back by 2 feet to help decrease the velocity of the ball. What do you think? Good idea?
No. Baseball is in danger of going too far with too many changes, and I think they're in danger of ruining the game. They should make some, you know, small changes to keep the game moving faster, you know, not let the pitcher and so many visits make the umpires regulate the game at the batter's box and some things like that. But some of these other changes are way too far, and they should forget about them. I mean, there's the danger that they're really going to, in trying to improve the game, are going to ruin the game. As it is now, the analytics and things like that have moved us, as Mitch talked about earlier, to a point where we're eliminating all of these other things in the game, hit and run, steals, bunting, the shifts have, and they're never gonna work against the shifts because they're teaching them just to hit for the fences. So that's why they don't hit the other way to break up the shift very often. I wish they would, I didn't get to get down on the Montreal thing. I wish they would just move them to Montreal, forget about this shift, whatever it takes to get them to Montreal, though, because if they're in the American League East playing in Montreal, where they're gonna play a bunch of games against the Red Sox, a bunch of games against the Yankees, and a bunch of games against the Toronto Blue Jays, their attendance is going to go up considerably from when it was in the National League East. So, one more quick thing. Minnesota Twins, I'm going to be taking a trip to Minnesota, first time ever. It started out to just visit friends, but I'm there the week the Yankees are there, and it's going to be exciting because they're facing the Twins, two teams with a couple of the best records in baseball. So I'm looking forward to seeing Target Field for the first time ever.
I'd love to see that field too someday.
Be a good game.
Now, Amy, Major League Baseball often experiments at the minor league level. We talked about the idea of moving the mound back by 2 feet, which is going to happen in the Atlantic League. Also happening in the Atlantic League is the idea of having a computerized strike zone.
That's right.
So it's actually going to be a computer that says ball one, strike. Now, the umpire is going to be there, if I understand this system correctly. The umpire is still there, crouched over, and the umpire is going to be told in his or her earpiece,
that's right,
that was a ball, that was a strike. And the umpire does have the ability to overrule the computer. What do you think about that?
Yikes.
Well, Kirk has an opinion about it. But, we've seen the strike zone shrink, and I think that's having an effect on the game. This would certainly combat that. It's not a perfect system. It's Doppler radar. It only sees where the ball goes over the plate. It doesn't see if the ball hit the dirt before the plate and bounced over. So that's one of the reasons why the umpire has veto power. But also there are calls that just have to be made by people. So as long as the umpire has veto power, I don't really have a problem with it.
I can't wait, though, for the first time that an umpire goes to overturn a computerized robot call, and then the robot says, I'm afraid I can't let you do that, Dave.
How?
I'm telling you, it's going to happen. Just get the computers out of baseball, folks. They're not there. They don't belong.
Get it. Baseball is a treasure. You don't want to keep taking out the human element out of the game. Robots making the strike calls? No. Forget it. Another dumb change.
We're all shaking our fists.
Mitch, I know that you're not enthusiastic about some of these changes, but let's just look at some other sports where changes have been made. In football, it was thought that people who kick field goals were getting too good at this, right? So, you know, they made it more difficult to kick a field goal. In basketball, you had years ago, centers dominated the game. And so what did they do? They invented the three-point shot. So other sports seem to adapt and make changes. Why not baseball?
Good for those other sports. No, I mean, look, first of all, baseball has gone through changes. I mean, we're talking about moving the mound back a couple of feet. You know, in the late 60s, they actually lowered the mound a little bit because they felt like guys like Bob Gibson and Sandy Koufax were too dominating of the hitters. Now, that's not as dramatic a change as moving the mound back a couple of feet, which I think would be disastrous for pitchers. They would be completely worn out and they would never get anybody out. But I do think that there is something. People ask me, you know, what's your favorite sport? And I always say my favorite sport is hockey. My favorite game is baseball. While baseball is both a game and a sport, it is unique in its qualities as a game. We've talked before about there is no clock in baseball. You know, the defense controls the ball. That's unique among sports. The uniqueness of baseball should not be tampered with too much. And I understand that the league has a problem, but I think that they're seeing the wrong problem. They are trying to fix things in the wrong way and radically altering things like getting a robot to call balls and strikes, moving the mound back. That's not what you need. What you need to do is use the things that have made this game so great, like bunting, like moving a runner over, like the hit and run, like some of those trick plays, the double
right
steal.
On.
That's the stuff that makes baseball incredible. That's why people stick with it, not just for years, but for generations.
And can I just say, Bob, if you find something in baseball, that magic three-point play, I'm all over it. But putting robots making strike calls and those type of things, that's not a three-point change like basketball did. There's nothing like that out there.
Well, you know, Mitch and Kurt, you know, pitchers complain that umpires don't have a consistent strike zone. And it can differ from one umpire to another. And it's up to the pitcher to figure out, you know, is this umpire calling high strikes or low strikes? So why not have it be consistent?
Because the umpire and that subjective element is part of the game. There are good umpires and there are not so good umpires. Most of them are pretty terrific. And when you look at the actual rates of how correct they are most of the time, they're up in the 90s and they're very, very good. But that dealing with what is the umpire supposed to call here? Is it giving me the outside strike? Can I work that part of the plate? That is part of the game. That is what the pitcher has to figure out. It's intricately wound up in it. You can't take that element away by using a computer.
And you know what, Bob? Dave, I encourage everybody, read David Cone's book. He talks about this a lot. If you're a good pitcher, you learn that you take advantage of the umpire strike zone. You figure out what the umpire strike zone is, and you work that.
Greg Maddux made a living
out
of it. Made it to the Hall of Fame based on that very strategy.
But we know that strike zone shrinks when the game's starting to go long or other factors like that. So I look at it more
That's
like
true.
A digital assistant than a robot.
Digital assistant.
No thanks.
Very diplomatic, Amy.
Thank you.
No thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for our program today. Many thanks to our great panel, VPR's Amy Noyes and Mitch Wertlieb. Also, WVMT Morning Drive co-host Kurt Wright. Great to have you on the program. Wonderful discussion.
Thanks so much, Bob.
Thanks.
Thanks, Bob.